I am Paul Harris. This is America Weekend, and that, of course, is the Beatles, A Day in the Life, from their classic Sgt. Pepper album from 1967. There's a great story about that song contained in a project by my next guest. His name is Kevin Howlett. He is a Beatles expert and the author of a massive new project called The Beatles, the BBC Archives, 1962 to 1970. He's also executive producer of The Beatles On Air, Live at the BBC Volume 2, which is out now in both CD and digital forms. And he wrote the essays for the booklet in the reissued Volume 1 of The Beatles Live at the BBC. The original version came out in 1994. As a Beatles fan, I've been looking forward all day to talking to you, Kevin. Welcome to America Weekend.
Thank you very much. What a big build-up.
Well, we'll get to the day in the life story in a moment, but your book here is really about the earliest days of the Beatles and their entire career as seen through the lenses and microphones at the BBC. And I'm curious how that relationship started.
Well, the thing about the BBC is they gave the Beatles their first break before anybody, really. The Beatles passed an audition for broadcast in March 62, which is well before they were signed to EMI Records by George Martin and released Love Me Do, the first record in the UK. So we tip our hat to the BBC for recognizing their potential and giving them that break.
How did that audition go? Were they immediately accepted? Or did they get the Decca Records treatment? Oh, you guys aren't going to make it.
Yeah, as Decca said, yeah, groups with guitars are on the way out. No, the BBC passed them for that audition, and in my book there's a replica of the application for the audition with the producer's notes on the back. And they're very interesting, actually, because the producer made some comments on the two vocalists, John and Paul, and he said, John Lennon, yes, Paul McCartney, no. But Paul did sing on the first broadcast, so he must have changed his mind. But he also summed them up. He said, not as rocky as most, more country and western, with a tendency to play music. One of the great understatements, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. So during that decade, how often did they appear on the BBC?
Well, many times, and playing music in programs for the BBC too, on the radio and television, but mostly on the radio. They did 53 music sessions between March 62 and June 65, phenomenal number.
Wow.
And they also had their own radio series, which was very early on in their career. In the summer of 1963, the BBC gave them a series. It was called Pop Go the Beatles, and that series produced so many unusual songs that they never did for their records. And many of those songs are on the two albums you mentioned, because they're doing cover versions of songs that never came out on their official records. We have this alternative recording history through the BBC.
Where did you find these recordings?
Well, this goes back a long time. I first made a radio special in 1982 about the Beatles' BBC recordings, and I was able to find out what programs and what songs they did. But finding those tapes was another matter. There was just one out of the 53 in the BBC archive. So I managed to find them in various places at the BBC, different tape libraries, transcription discs, but also producers who'd kept copies, fortunately. But still many, many sessions weren't there. And it's been a 30-year quest, really, to restore the Beatles BBC archive, and we're almost there. There's a few sessions still missing.
Is it true that you had to get some of these recordings from people who recorded it off the radio?
Well, what happens is every time I do a program or there's a project like the albums, people then think, I think I taped some of those programs off the radio when I was a teenager, and they do get in touch. In fact, just recently, because of the publicity of this new album, somebody got in touch, and we got them up to Abbey Road Studios to have a listen to their tapes. Sadly, there was nothing on there that we didn't have already, but you just never know who might have a tape out there. So, well, you know, we still live in hope of restoring some of the archive that's still missing.
You know, in 2013, you can download any music you want anytime. You can listen to audio from all sorts of sources, radio, digital, online, your phone, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But in the early 60s in Britain, wasn't the BBC pretty much the only place where you could hear music?
Yeah, that's such a good point because, you know, music then, it was just not as ubiquitous as it is now. And, you know, you really had to struggle to hear pop music, especially the kind of music the Beatles loved, American rhythm and blues, for example. So, yeah, there were just three national BBC stations in the UK in the early 60s. There was no alternative during the day. And they didn't play much pop music, hardly played a record, which is why the Beatles performed live at the BBC so many times, that was the only way to get your music out there. And they'd do anything to be in a BBC studio, travel hundreds of miles across the country through the night. So, yeah, finding that music was so, you know, a real hard thing to do. And the Beatles were very clever at finding unusual songs. And they were into Motown records when Motown was just not known about in the UK. So the first broadcast they ever did, they did Please Mr. Postman. Well, it may well have been an American number one for the Marvelettes, but it was just not known at all in Britain. So they popularized that music. They really did play a part in breaking rhythm and blues in this country.
But it was still the Beeb, which was a very strict broadcasting organization. And I mentioned at the top of the interview that there's a story about that song, A Day in the Life. And in your new book, you include a reproduction of a memo that was written by Frank Gillard, who was the director of sound broadcasting at the BBC, to Sir Joseph Lockwood, the chairman of EMI House, which was where the BBC headquarters was located, on May 23rd, 1967, about A Day in the Life. Would you mind reading that memo for my audience?
Yeah, it was fascinating to come across documents like this in the BBC's written archives, and I love the language in this letter. It's very much of its time, and Frank Gillard, very respected man, writes to Sir Joseph Lockwood, and he says, "I never thought the day would come when we'd have to put a ban on an EMI record, but sadly, that is what has happened over this track. We've listened to it over and over again with great care, and we cannot avoid coming to the conclusion that the words, 'I'd love to turn you on,' followed by that mounting montage of sound, could have a rather sinister meaning." And then he goes on and says, "Turned on is a phrase which can be used in many different circumstances, but it is currently much in vogue in the jargon of the drug addicts. We do not feel that we can take the responsibility of appearing to favor or encourage these unfortunate habits. And that is why we shall not be playing this recording in any of our programs, radio or television." And that held true for several years. Although, ironically, when the BBC finally got its pop station called Radio 1 in 1967 in September, pretty soon that station had jingles saying, "Radio 1 turns you on." So they changed their minds about that. But it was banned for several years. It's remarkable, as was I Am the Walrus, as I point out in the book too, because there was a line in that the BBC didn't like about knickers. So that was restricted as well.
Wow. By the way, we should point out there were American radio stations that would not play the song for the same reason. It wasn't just the strict BBC that cracked down on that because it was a drug reference in their minds.
That's true. In fact, I think the BBC picked up on the fact that it might be a problem ahead of the release of the album because several Los Angeles radio stations had got advanced tracks from Sgt. Pepper and they'd placed a ban on the song. So, no, it wasn't just the straight-laced BBC, although the BBC was pretty straight-laced in those days.
Were all of the things that they did for the BBC performance shows?
No, they did interview shows, and especially they did their last music session in 1965 when they just got too busy to come into the BBC, and of course their recordings got much more complicated too, so they couldn't perform them live necessarily. But in the book there are transcripts of very revealing interviews from later in their career, all the way, in fact, to 1970, just before they split up with Paul's announcement. And there's a George Harrison interview in the 1970 chapter where he's extremely positive about the Beatles staying together. You wouldn't guess necessarily that suddenly it's all going to be over. You know, he says, we'll make solo albums, but then after that, we'll be Beatles again. So there could have been another album in 1970. It's something, the straw that broke the camel's back, according to Paul leaving the Beatles, I think, was when Phil Spector started to tamper with the Long and Winding Road, and then Paul, the guy, the only one who really hadn't left the group at some point, was the person who split the group up. But, those BBC interviews are like confessionals, really. They tell it all to the interviewers in 1969, 1970, when the constant theme is, will you stay together?
I can't tell you how jealous I am of every one of those BBC presenters, as they were called in the day, for the opportunity to sit down and talk to those guys. Yeah, it's one thing to talk to McCartney this year, as you did for a special that just aired in America on Thanksgiving weekend, but to have been there during the heyday was amazing. And this book and CD are a great look back at that. The BBC Archives, 1962 to 1970. Kevin Howlett, thanks so much for joining me here today. I could talk to you about this all day long, but unfortunately, we're all out of time.
Well, thank you very much, Paul. Pleasure.
I'm Paul Harris. This show is called America Weekend, every Saturday and Sunday from the Envision Radio Networks. America Weekend.